with Armand DeMille.
Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Funny thing happened the other day. It started off with when one of my associates told me that she was suddenly going to leave working with me and going off somewhere else with another opportunity she had. Terrific. I was happy for her. And so I put an ad in Craigslist and said, here, this position is open, administrative assistant position open. Well, I had the ad in there for 1 hour and I got 450 responses. 450 responses. And then after getting those responses, as I culled through them, and there were some specifics, like some bookkeeping and stuff like that, after those responses, we interviewed, or I had my interviewer, Professor Linda Vanella, who does interviews. She did the interviews on about 150 people. But we learned something about the people. These were almost all people in their 20s. Now, what is it about people in their 20s? And I got a chance to see close up and have correspondence with people who were in this place. They were different. It was a different generation than the generation I knew. It was different than when I was 20 and the 20-year-olds I know and some of the other 20-year-olds. And then simultaneously, my associate, Lauren Sykes, says, let's do a program about the 20-somethings. Linda Vanella, who was doing the interviews, says, you know, in my class in sociology, this is what we teach about what this is about. It sounded to me like we had a program here. It sounded to me like this was worthy of investigation. So we took a little look. What does this 20-something mean? And it means something a little different than what we know. It's like being at a place in life where you can afford to have, to kind of keep adolescence. It's like becoming an adolescent and staying an adolescent well into your 20s. You could avoid commitment. You could travel. You could compete for unpaid internships. You could do different small jobs that have no meaning but are artistic. You could basically stay at the party as long as you want. Don't need to get married because there is no clock ticking, because the 30-year-old clock no longer exists, the dreaded clock. The 20s are a black box. There's a lot churning in there. One-third of the people in their 20s move to a new residence every year. 40% move back home with their parents at least once. They go through an average of 7 jobs in their 20s, more job changes than in any other stretch of their lives. 2/3 of the people spend at least some time living with a romantic partner without being married. And marriage occurs later than ever. The median age at first marriage in the early 70s, when the baby boomers were young, was 21 for women and 23 for men. By 2009, it's climbed to 26 for women, 28 for men. 5 years in a little more than a generation. How did that happen? That's a big gap. We're in the thick of what one sociologist called the changing timetable for adulthood. It's like you don't have to be. In 1960, 77% of women and 65% of men had, by the time they reached 30, passed all of their milestones. A Canadian study reported that a typical 30-year-old in 2001 had completed the same number of milestones as a 25-year-old in the 70s. The whole idea is a little surprising. There is different places that we get. It's kind of unique. I want to introduce my two associates. In the studio with me is Lauren Sykes, who is my assistant and a psychology intern who has done some research on this. Also with me is Linda Vanella, who is a sociologist and a social worker and a professor of sociology. Linda, you've been approaching this subject for quite a while, haven't you?
Yes, I have, Armand, and it's a joy to be here to speak of this. There's much to say, but simply, it's very different. It's a very different time in history, and it's quite poignant, and I think it's important that we understand not only what it involves, but the effect of it. The 20-year-olds today, the generation of 20 to 30, have many, many more different options than we had previously. I think the statistics that you just read prove that it is quite different today and significant that we understand all of the pieces of it. So I'm really happy to be here to talk about this.
And when you teach this, do you teach people in their 20s?
Yes, I do.
And so you're teaching people in their 20s that they are living in a generation with a mental set that's different than previous mental sets.
Yes, by all means, yes, I do. And we look at that, and I think it's sometimes raising their consciousness, because I don't think they're really aware of it until we explore it.
Lauren, you brought this to my attention, but you've also been dealing with this among you and your friends and your associates, right?
Yes.
You're a scholar. You're a student. Mm-hmm. Why don't you just stay in school? I asked Lauren a question the other day. I said, Lauren, why aren't you married? You know what she said?
Why should I be?
Well, there's a question. So is this 20-something generation a generation of people who are living longer on the partying phase, having more fun, not setting down their roots, not determining, you know, are they better off than the rest of us who are grinding our elbows and, you know, keeping ourselves all the time desperately seeking our goals? That's the real question I have to ask. What do you think, Lauren?
Well, I feel like this, what comes to mind when I think of you, your description, is this whole hipster phenomenon. So you have young adults, let's take New York. They're living in Brooklyn, Williamsburg, you know, still on their parents' funds, partying. They take on professions such as DJ or artist or blogger. So a large majority of their time is spent partying, is spent in these social arenas. So they prolong the monogamous relationship, or they prolong going back to school in order to still live as if they're in college.
Well, it's like living like you're still in college.
Well, undergrad.
Well, what was different when I was a kid? Well, there was the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. There were wars. There were protests. We
civil
were fighting
rights.
Civil rights. Mm-hmm. You don't have that nowadays. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying.
You're saying that there are no cause?
There's no cause. There's no huge battle that we have to overcome. We can live off of our parents' funds and still, you know, have fun.
You know, I think something happened in 2000 when Bush got elected. I remember after that election, which many people believe was stolen, I remember after that election, there was kind of an exhausted feeling of people saying, no more fighting. It doesn't pay to fight. It doesn't get you anywhere. And people just kind of gave up. And I have a sneaking suspicion that it was at that turning point that a lot of people just decided, I may as well get the most out of life that I can get, because why invest myself in a future that can be so easily stolen away by crooks? I think. Mm-hmm. I think helplessness, powerlessness was kind of the primary response that most people had. Just like when we went to war, how there was no giant protest against this war in Iraq, mm-hmm. as there was the Vietnam War. You know, they were just like, but we can't do anything to stop it. So it's almost like the adolescents who have become in their 20s feel powerless and decided if we're going to be powerless, we may as well party. May as well not try to get powered. What do you think?
I agree.
No use fighting, right?
No use fighting. Let's have fun. Let's live the life that we see on reality TV and, you know, just indulge.
Interestingly enough, I agree with you to a certain extent. However, I'm happy to see that the research is showing us that despite what seems to be a lack of purpose, a lack of cause, that there seems to be a wonderful optimism. When questioned, we have 96% of this study that shows that people in their 20s, when they were asked about their future, they felt very positive about it. They felt that they would land on their feet. Whether or not there was a cause, I think that our young people in their 20s are giving significant thought to their choices, whether it be a mate, whether it be their education, whether it be a job. And yes, they're looking for, I think, satisfaction and joy and a sense of accomplishment in their endeavors.
Well, okay, maybe so. So let's say, Linda, that what they're really saying is, yes, I have a positive attitude. Well, positive attitude is kind of questionable because there's also an awful lot of narcissism involved in this process, which we're going to talk about. And positive attitude could be the very positive attitude that a young man will tell his mother when she says, what are you studying? And he says, I'm studying photography. And she says, but that's not going to get you a job. Well, my attitude is I'm going to get a job. My attitude is I'm going to be able to get whatever I need, you know? My attitude is that I'm going to always be able to do it. If you ask them about relationships, most young women, well, what do you think? Do you think young women all feel, well, it's all right if I don't settle down now, I could have it sometime in the future? What do you think, Lauren? Or do you think that thing is still there, that scary thing of you better seal the deal, you better capture somebody?
I don't think it's so much of the biological clock, because there you don't have to necessarily find a mate or get married in order to have a child. So I don't think
That's a very big point.
Yeah.
Very big option. You don't need to. If the biological clock was the impetus for getting somebody, now we've learned you can adopt children or you could have children without a father. Mm-hmm. Right?
Exactly.
You can even have them in a same-sex marriage. Mm-hmm. Wow. And so that takes away that need to get married.
Yeah. From a social aspect, it just might be you want that security. You want that man to call your own. But I don't think it's necessarily biological anymore.
I do think that there's social and cultural phenomenon that go into that and play out significantly. So although physically, yes, we have made great changes, I think that socially and culturally, many young people, both males and females, do hear and know of that pressure. Well, you're in your 20s, why not find somebody to settle down with? When are you going to begin your family? When are you going to get a real job and make real money? Mm-hmm. So I think that is still present.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely still think that there's the pressure there, but on the reverse, since premarital sex isn't viewed as how it used to be viewed, it's not frowned upon like how it used to be. So
no, in fact, premarital sex now with all of the protections, you know, and all of the safeties has become once again something that's simple.
Yeah. So there's not the pull to have a monogamous relationship because you can engage in, you know, a sexual relationship with somebody that you're not monogamous or committed to.
So relationships don't seem to be things. What about profession? What about finding a profession and nailing it down? So this is what I think you both have said to me. The number of people entering doctors and lawyers' schools, as have I read the statistics, has dropped dramatically. Who wants to go through that? Mm-hmm. What budding narcissistic adolescent wants to go through the pain of staying up 20 hours a night, a day, and studying and not going out and not having a social life and not having your drinks as everybody else is, mm-hmm. and not being at the party? What's the reward? The reward is you're going to become a doctor. And then what do you become as a doctor? Do you get any great amount of respect? Not nowadays. You're a pill pusher. A doctor is lower on the totem pole than a sports star.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is not to have a person aspiring to that. So then what's left? Become a lawyer. Oy. Right now, how's that? I like lawyers. I think they're nice people as people go. But what a profession. It's a profession about nothing. It means I think you're bad. Well, I think you're bad. Well, I'm going to make you pay for being bad. Well, I'm going to defend myself against paying it. And it's a profession about air. It's about nothing. This is how you want to spend your life. You want to have that kind of power. No, you don't want to do that. Meanwhile, instead of studying for the bar and being run around, you know, for 20 hours a day and studying for medicine, it just doesn't have its value. So what? You don't have a profession. What do you do for a living? I'm a blogger. No, all right, that's cool, right? What do you do for a living? I'm a photographer. Means you own a camera. That's all it means, right? I'm going to show my pictures to somebody. But that's okay. That's admirable, too. That means you're having a good time. Yeah, I have a good time. What time do you wake up? Whenever I feel like it. What time do you go to bed? I don't know. Is there a party tonight?
Exactly. I find that when I'm in the classroom with these students who, in fact, are speaking exactly as you are stating, Aman, they'll talk about sleeping during the day, getting up at night, and various lifestyles. And oftentimes they'll speak about their parents who have judgment. And yet they'll say, but I know I'll be okay. I just have to find myself. And I think that they do find themselves. And it may not be in those professions. I think that there is a sense of living that may in fact be a little bit different today than it was 10, 20, 30 years ago. I think at that time when we looked at professions of law and medicine, it meant power, it meant money. And I think today that our 20-year-olds are a little bit brighter than that. I think they're thinking more about their life and what it is they really want to do for a living, not just have a job to make money and go through 20 hours of studying or accomplishing, you know, these kinds of feats and making money that really is not going to offer them
And then
much.
Working for the insurance companies.
Exactly.
And then negotiating mm-hmm. fees. And then knowing that you, the person who you're defending just killed somebody and making a negotiation where you get them off with a lighter sentence. And that becomes your profession. Yes, I think the kids are getting a little wiser.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're doing is they're saying whatever you created as adulthood, you and your previous generations, we don't necessarily want to join it. That's on one hand. On the other hand, their refusal to join it does leave them slightly in a trap that mm-hmm. they don't know about. And this is the trap that you see, right, Lauren?
Yeah. I mean, again, I don't want to grow up in a society where so much focus is put on image and narcissism when we need doctors, we need lawyers. We can't all just be, you know, DJs or photographers.
But it may be that we just 1 out of 100 become doctors, as mm-hmm. opposed to the way it was 20 years ago when everybody wanted to be a doctor because they could be a plastic surgeon mm-hmm. and they could get a lot of money. And it was all about money. There was no doctoring. There was nobody saying, I want to heal. Mm-hmm. You know, I just want the money.
I mean, you have to follow your passion. You have to follow what drives you, what moves you. But in regards to that, you still need to focus on what you individually want to do. Don't just put out little effort expecting great reward when you set out to do something, you know, a little bit more substantial or with more substance.
So then how do we help the 20-something if we're somebody else? Let's say we're the 40-something that has 20-something-year-old kids. Now, what do we do nowadays to facilitate and perpetuate this 20-something thing? We offer them money. We say, well, it's okay, kid. Look, you don't have to work. Let me pay your rent. What else do we do?
We let them move back in.
We let them move back home. Yeah, we saved your room for you, just the way you had it when you were a child. right? Same football, same bunk bed, mm-hmm. right? What else do we do?
We oftentimes not only condone, but support. I've known many people who say, don't get married. Live together until you know this is the right person. Or wait off. Don't have a child right away. So in one way, we're perpetuating that, and we're supporting that.
Well, you know, I think one thing about that I've learned is that people in their 40s and 50s feel kind of empty after the child leaves the house. And you get this kind of empty nest syndrome combined with menopause. The two of them go together, and the parent is challenged with, uh-oh, I feel empty and I feel useless. And what they do is they babyfy their children. They make their children dependent adolescents to feed their fear of being useless in the world. So what you also do with your adolescent child is you encourage them to stay children. I have a patient I know who keeps trying to keep her hands off her son. But by keeping her hands off, I mean she keeps paying for everything he does. He went out there to visit his wife. I say, who paid? His girlfriend, I said, who paid? Well, I just helped him out a little bit. So in no way is she going to help him get to a place where he feels responsible for his life. It's a compulsion on her part. She can't stop it. And what many parents have done, many adult parents have done, is in some way they've dealt with their own longer lives. Now it takes us on another track. The baby boomers are living longer. They have empty lives. They've even retired. What are they going to do? They turn around and start living the lives of their 20-somethings. So they encourage the 20-something not to get a profession, not to get a job, not to get married, not to leave home. This freedom that the 20-somethings think they have is really not free. They're children, they're babies of their parents.
By all means, and not only are they babies of their parents, but they're oftentimes left sort of helpless and not quite knowing, feeling this sort of inner turmoil of wanting to branch out, live on their own, but yet knowing, how am I going to do it? And in other ways, you're obviously touching on something else in that emotional relationship between parent and child. If the child feels, well, I'm giving mom this vicarious pleasure of living through me, and if my becoming an attorney is going to fulfill dad's long-lost goal, it kind of creates this pathology that's really very unhealthy and perpetuates, in a way, kind of despair of the 20-year-old.
We don't have the thing that allows us to be our own person anymore. It was so encouraged when I was a kid. You know, when I think about what they did in some of the different cultures, what you do when a person gets to be of age, send them out into the jungle by himself. You know, tell them, here's a spear, go out there, travel for a month, see what that's like, see what life is about. And we kind of protect them over and over again. And therefore, it becomes very easy to be that curled up little puppy, you know, who's just living within a very small place in life. How do we inspire true manhood? I'm looking for the word. The comparable word is not womanhood. But how do we inspire personhood?
Independence.
In people who would like to be, who have the option of staying children. You know, independence is a way to do it. But how do we inspire that? How do we get that? How do we get to the grown-ups anymore? Or maybe grown-ups are a wrong idea. Maybe we should do away with the grown-ups. Maybe there are just too many of us. You know, maybe the kids should take over and just live the world like it's a party.
May I say one thing? I think you're speaking well of the rites of passage, as most of us know. Those rites of passage, whether you send the boy out to get the, you know, kill the hunt or hunt the kill, and women begin their menses, or whatever the rites may be, they too are consistently changing. But one thing that, as a sociologist, when we look at the developmental child, we look at the changing timetable for adult, and we look at the transition to adulthood as marked by 5 milestones, which I think are interesting to look at: completing school, leaving home, becoming financially independent, marrying, and having a child. Now, isn't that the five things that we have been covering right here and now? Because those five things have changed dramatically. So if, in fact...
Right, repeat those again, Linda.
Okay, completing school.
Right, that's something that everybody really sees as... What about getting your name in the telephone book? Mm-hmm. Isn't that important? You know, having a listing when the book comes out and it has your name in it, isn't that a milestone?
Well, not according to sociologists.
Okay.
Sociologists see completing school as marking your adulthood, as leaving home. Now, we're talking about those 20-year-olds are coming in and out of the home. So leaving home is another milestone. Becoming financially independent. Now, we saw that with all of these people who came in looking for this job this very week. Marrying and having a child. Wow, those five significant milestones that have always been marked by sociologists in my texts I teach as marking the adulthood. Well, those are the five things that we're looking at that are not being looked at as being adulthood, but are being those very parts of those 20-year-olds who are struggling to find that adulthood. So maybe, in fact, adulthood might mean something different.
It might mean. This is Armand DeMille with you, with Dr. Linda Vanella and with Lauren Sykes. One thing is clear. Getting to what we would generally call adulthood is happening later than ever. Our question is why. And it's a subject of lively debate amongst policymakers, academics. To some, what we're seeing is transient epiphenomenon, the product of cultural and economic forces. To others, the longer road to adulthood signifies something deep, durable, and maybe better suited to our neurological hardwiring. What we're seeing, they insist, is the dawning of a new life stage, a stage that all of us need to adjust to. And this, to me, kind of almost rings true, because I know, Lauren, you and I were talking about the physiology of the brain and what happens now that we've learned that the brain is always growing. Especially through the 20s. Mm-hmm. When I see young children who have mastered computers and have some sense of communication different than I would have ever had, I realize the world is changing. The world didn't change for many years. The 30s to the 40s to the 50s to the 60s, the changes were minor compared to the changes that have taken place over the last 20 years. And what we're looking at is a different world, a different generation, and we can't judge them by our standards. We can't look at them and say, this is what we've always known. This is the same as we've always known. They have to go back and be like us. They have to study. They have to get a job. They got to put money in the bank. How can you put money in a retirement fund when the bank may go broke? How could you invest in retirement when your corporation like General Motors may go bankrupt and take away your retirement fund? All of these false things that we had out there have been busted. So maybe it's wise not to believe in it, but one thing is for sure. The 20-something generation is looking at life very differently than we ever did. And it's time to pay attention, because maybe there's something we can learn. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, a little beautiful music, and we will continue our discussion.
To be lately.
Well, that's kind of an interesting young song. Do people doubt themselves? Do the young folks really doubt themselves? Or do they get to a point where they don't after a while? You know, after a while, you say to yourself, I think maybe I'm not doing exactly right. Now, Lauren made mention, this is Armand DeMille with Linda Vanella and Lauren Sykes. By the way, I noticed that our website suddenly got a rash of applications for the job just because I mentioned it. The job was filled immediately by the most amazing human, who you'll all meet, Thelma Wingate, who is now chief cook and bottle washer up at the front of our office. And Thelma just kind of like was the first person that walked in, and I said, wow, terrific. And she bakes. All right, so going back. And I got to get her husband on here. He does really good work. He's a social worker who works with deadbeat dads. Wow. I want to get him here, you know. We'll do it. All right, so let's go back to this this term of narcissism as it correlates to this generation. Narcissism. What is this idea of narcissism? Narcissism is admiration of the false self, is what it means. It's not admiration of self. It's not self-love. In fact, it's self-loathing is what the word really means. Narcissism is a way of your loving an image of yourself, but not your real self. But it doesn't matter. Many people create images of themselves and just love it. So you get dressed in a very tight dress, a very tight skirt. You're wearing a tight polo shirt. You got your muscles cut. You've got your washboard. You've got all this stuff. You look at yourself in the mirror and you go, I could have my way with you, you say to yourself. But, you know, I mean, in effect, you're trying to get to a point where you admire yourself. I have a good friend, and she's a really good friend, but if you put a mirror anywhere near her, she looks in it. You know, it's like the mirror is, she can't avoid it. Mm-hmm. There's a mirror. Oh, she's looking. So what is it? Are we checking to see if we exist? What is this about this admiration? Now, if you look at TV series, movie series, you begin seeing how this this narcissism has taken hold on the society. Lauren, what do you see?
Well, I would agree with that. I just think that due to certain networks such as Facebook or Twitter, it's kind of the constant need to show everyone what you're doing. You're projecting yourself, as you said, this image that you're cultivating or this persona that you want to be viewed as. But that's not necessarily the true you.
But now, Facebook and Twitter couldn't exist unless there was a need by everyone to be seen by other people. I mean, look at what you're doing. You're putting your life out there, and you're saying, look at me, look at me. I went to the store today, mm-hmm. You know? So now that, take to that and add reality shows.
Well, with reality shows, for example, you have the Kim Kardashians or the Paris Hiltons that gain fame off of a silly sex tape. So, you know, 20-somethings see that as a way of, again, gaining immense wealth with very little effort.
It's an interesting program recently. Recently, we've learned about the blackmailers who have seen teenagers who have Facebooked or emailed, texted pictures of themselves, sexual pictures of themselves. And these guys who are these exploiters, they get the photograph, they call the person, and they say, unless you make more explicit sexual pictures, I'm going to put this up for the world to see. I'm going to put it on Facebook. I'm going to put it on Twitter. And so we see these children as victims, these young girls, and then they do what the guy says. What we're not paying attention to is many levels, they want to be seen by the whole world. Mm-hmm. On many levels, what really invites this is not just the fact that they're victims, but the very fact that they would put something graphically sexual on the internet means narcissism. I want you to see it. I want you to see my body. I want you to be responsive to me. Mm-hmm. I want you to like me. I want you to love me. The reality TV shows are all the same thing.
It's a cry for attention. You know, you have shows like The Hills, which put such emphasis on manufactured drama and beauty and just falsities.
I was watching Tyra Banks. I couldn't believe it. I was looking what I was seeing. She was doing a show about women who wear baggy jeans and how they should be banned from the world. And I was saying, no, you're down to this. You know, so you think you want to dance or whatever it's called, or you want to be the next model, mm-hmm. or all of the music shows as well. Mm-hmm. You know, the talent shows. It's all about somebody pay attention to me. If there is this dying need to be attended to, then there certainly is going to be a diminished need to bury yourself in some kind of productive work. If all it's about is pay attention to me, see me, play with me, you know? And that's what the world has come to, because we don't have any rewards. No, let me invite you into my world. Let me invite you into the world where you buy a house and it's worth half its value.
Yeah.
Let me show you a retirement plan that gets chopped away because the banks decide to make it look like they don't have money. Let me show you an investment. Let me show you all the rules that we used, none of which have worked. They haven't worked, my friends. And we're inviting our youth to follow our path. In previous generations, it did work. In the 40s, you could convince somebody to buy a house because by the time the 50s came, that house was worth more money. Mm-hmm. And by the 60s, it was worth more. But you can't convince the youth anymore because they know we were wrong. We were wrong. We were wrong to be in the wars. We were wrong not to protest it. We were wrong. And it's hard for us to swallow that, so we want them to be different.
Well, I think that's where we need to be a little bit more creative and a little bit more trusting. I think that when I am in the classroom, and we certainly explore this Facebook and this whole need to get online and show explicit pictures of ourselves sexually and the whole concept of image and what we need to project. And I see that what might have seemed to many people in the 50s and 60s as something that may be dangerous or may be questionable, I think sometimes I see, they look at me and they say, well, it's just drama. It's just fun. It's light. It's no big deal. And I think that oftentimes we, as a little bit older than in our 20s, we tend to judge the way that we grew up. And so, yes, we maybe become a little bit cynical because we can't tell them, okay, buy a house and in 10 years you'll double your, because the fact is that they are smart and they see. So there's no way that we can. So in many ways, I think that generation gap oftentimes leaves us a little bit. How do we help them to become adults? How do we coach them into adult and invite
and
them?
Can we?
Can
because
we?
This is Armand DeMille with Linda Vanella and Lauren mm-hmm. Sykes. We're talking about the 20-something generation as the adolescents who don't necessarily grow up. Well, maybe that's our judgment. You know, can we? Do we have a right to teach them? You know, I think about the Indians in Alaska or some of the Indians in Alaska who, when a baby is born, they take the baby and they worship the baby. And no matter what the baby wants, they give it to the baby because they believe the baby embodies God. And it is the baby that is the embodiment of God, therefore the great teacher. So they say, listen to the baby and you'll learn what you have to do. Well, maybe this is what's happening. Maybe the rest of us have got to give up and turn over the reins to the 20-somethings. You know, maybe they know something and we could learn from it. One of the things I keep encouraging grandparents to do is to use their children's children, use their grandchildren to teach them about computers. Let them see that their skills, that their teaching has meaning. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, let yourself learn this stuff, be part of this world. You can't step out of it anymore.
I agree totally. I think, you know, what they say, out of the mouths of babes, mm-hmm. I think there's truth there. And I know that I oftentimes find at the end of the semester, boy, I come out of that class and I think I just hope they learned a little bit from me as to what I've learned from them. Because in truth, I think that there's a lot of wisdom and there's a lot of creativity. And it may be time that we look at them and say, maybe there is something more that we can learn as well as to teach them, that it has to be an exchange. So I think that oftentimes we just get a little stuck in our old values, but I think there's so much that we can learn from them.
Hey, 212-209-2900. I wonder if we could take a couple of calls on this issue. 212-209-2900. Before we get to synaptic pruning, what about that?
Well, it's a term used to describe brain function, in that either you use it or you lose it.
Meaning that you have a brain there, and if you're using it actively, you're still developing more physical brain.
Exactly.
And more brain power at the same time.
You're exercising it. You're not staying stagnant.
Hmm. Very fascinating. Brain pruning.
Yes. And there's been a lot to find that now with all of the brain research that we're able to find and see now, that's becoming evident that where we thought in childhood, where our brain was developing at such a rapid pace, now we're finding that, in fact, in our teens and in our 20s, that we still see this proliferation of brain growth, which is quite significant when we're talking about this whole 20s-something generation.
212-209-2900. We do have time for a call. Michael, can we grab one? Hi there, you're on the air.
Hey, Armand, I'm right in between both generations. I'm 40 years old. I'm the youngest of, like, my generation. My siblings are much older than me. But I have nephews that are, like, 26, you know, 24 to 26. They are so irresponsible. And, but also, the older generation doesn't understand anything about them. I'm, like, you know, somewhere in the middle.
When you say irresponsible... You know, that sounds like it bothers you in some way.
Yeah.
You'd like them to pick up part of the task of what you have to do, right?
Yeah, but I don't quite feel like how, let's say my brother is over 50, how he feels about him, that they're
always really
wrong,
angry.
Why they're doing this. I understand.
You know why they're not being responsible? Because they don't have to. You know, they don't have to, because they got you guys who have nothing to do with your time pick up all the responsibilities.
Yes.
And they don't have to do it. It's like asking Lauren, why aren't you married? Why should I be? Why should I be responsible? You know, do you have some reason to encourage them? Do you got some goodies that they're going to get out of increasing this sense of responsibility?
It's true, but I feel bad for them. Everything costs so much money. I mean, they're making decent money, and they're still broke. They're poor.
But that's all part of it, too. All part of it is spending everything you have. You know, it is spending it.
And their parents pay for this, pay for that.
Exactly, because if you didn't have parents paying for it, you wouldn't be broke.
Yeah, in a way, I envy them.
Why are you broke? Because I could be. Right? Why are you spending your money? Because I could. Yeah, in a way, you do envy them, don't you?
In a way, because I can't get away with anything.
Because you feel responsible.
I guess so. I was responsible even at that age. And I don't know, I'm like somewhere in between. I think I'm repeating myself on that. But, you know, I understand where they're coming from on having a really good time. I mean, we often interlap and go into the same places. It is kind of funny. And I do tend to frown upon very often my older siblings. I make fun of them a real lot.
Yeah, well, you sound like a really good guy. You sound like you give an awful lot of your heart to the family as well.
Hey, thanks.
You know, I think your consciousness is a great addition.
That means a lot coming from you.
Yeah, well, it means a lot, too, to your world and to your family.
Yeah. But here's something. I called both of them. I called my nephews and I called my brother and go, put on WBAI. There's a guy, Armand DeMille. And they just both said, nah.
Who wants that kind of stuff? Nice to talk to you.
Same here.
Thanks for calling in. You know, one point about this is that this cultural difference is important in this issue, isn't it? Because this isn't true in every culture, is it?
No, it's not. You know, in developing countries where you're almost forced to work in your adolescence, you don't have this prolonged period because there's no time to meander about what your future is going to be because you just need to have bread on the table.
Yeah, so it's not all people.
No, by all means, no. You'll find many different pieces, and it's very interesting when we do go into the classroom and discover and research this It's really fantastic to see the differences among the 20-year-olds in various parts of the world. And yes, as you said, Lauren, in undeveloped countries and in many other, even in the islands, you'll find that, you know, when there's no need for this schooling and further education, it's simply survival. And so, you know, young people will get out at 10 and 12, and they know what they need to do, and that is to bring home some money to feed the family.
And they form families and real early.
Yeah. Certainly do, yes, yeah. Yes.
This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Hi there.
Yeah, hello.
Hello.
Something clicked when you said, Armand, when you said, talked about the President Bush. I think that was really like a crossing over place because...
Wasn't it?
In the sense that the man gloated on his own ignorance. He had no responsibility. He was like a teenager. He had... And he made a world where it showed that you could take... When you look at a man like Gore and you compare him to Bush, you see a man with responsibility, knowledge, stuff like that. Bush was a whole different species.
Interesting. He was exactly this picture of the irresponsible. I don't have to pay the dues for what I do. You know, you're exactly right. That's very brilliant on your part. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And what you see is, as a result, is you see wars all over the place without any real forethought. They talked about... He started formulating things that were never formulated before, like preemptive strikes. Who ever thought about that before? It's like if I go into a bar and I punch somebody because I think maybe he will punch me or he wants to punch me or something like that. So it's a totally teenage thing, and the whole societal structure is inverted when you get... It run by a guy that's incompetent and immature. He's a teenager.
Very good. Very, very good. Thank you. Thank you for calling in.
All right.
212-209-2900. Very smart. Yes, I did feel something, you know. During the election in 2000 specifically, I almost felt like the weather changed. I said, this loss, this thing. It was like, I remember I was watching Jon Stewart and I saw the look on his face when he learned of the loss. It was like, you know, like a spirit left, decided to say, hey, where's the party? It's not here anymore. 212-209-2900. Let's take one more call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hello, Armand. How are you?
I'm good.
I'm just calling because I'd like to comment on your adolescent becoming into adulthood phase of life. I actually had a chance to visit you in the office. My parents donated some money to WBI, and they got a free certificate for one session. I came in, and something you said to me was like, you know, I questioned. I said, how do I know when I become an adult? And you said, you know, you'll just know. You'll pay your bills on time, and you will it'll just come to you, and it's a gradual process. So I think it is harder for 20-somethings. I actually just turned 30. To come into adulthood, and it is a changing dynamic.
Well, do you feel it? Do you feel it? Have you felt it happen to you? Do you feel like you're an adult and you've grown up and that you're responsible and you make plans? Do you feel it?
You know, in snippets. Like today I went to an old boss for a reference, and just to go back in life and see that I've matured and I've come from this place and I'm going on to the next place. So it's not, I don't think it's a transition where, you know, we were in your generation, you were 19, you got married, and you have a kid, and then all of a sudden you're thrusted into it. But it's a slower process, becoming an adult. I have an older brother who has two kids, and he said almost it was a letdown that he thought it was going to be this grand explosion into adulthood and these kids, and it's almost that it's there, and then you have to deal with it as it comes. So, I mean, and personally, I feel like in snippets, in slow movements, I'm becoming an adult, and not in any one succinct move will I decidedly turn into an adult.
Yeah, I think that's kind of important, because one of the things that you're talking about also is doing it with consciousness. You know, there's a lot of people There are the conscious people and the unconscious people. And the unconscious people, they look at the world and they blame everything on the outside for why they are the way they are. And the conscious people say, it's me. I'm going to make it happen. It's all in me to make it happen. Conscious people maturing make a great donation in life, just as you're doing. You know, as you mature, you are bringing your gift into life because you're aware of yourself. So I feel grateful that we've got you on the team. You know, and I don't remember us meeting. If you gave me your name, I probably would, but I wouldn't want you to do that on air. But if I told you that, then I gave you one of the great Buddhist lessons. The way that you know when you're getting ready to do it is when you're doing it.
Thank you. And I just want to say the one suggestion you made is that I had suggested buying myself a motorcycle, and I ended up doing that. And for better or for worse, I've enjoyed it, and that's, you know, that late adolescence of my my late 20s of kind of just not deciding not to rush into becoming more than I wanted to.
Well, it must have been something you really wanted if I suggested it. Thank you so much for calling in.
All right, thank you.
All right, this is Armand DeMille. My guest, Linda Vanellis, psychotherapist, sociology teacher, Lauren Sykes, associate. And I want to thank you very much. I'll be back with you tomorrow, my friends. If you want to reach either Lauren or Linda, you can do it through my office. Or go to the website, thepositivemind.com. I'll speak to you tomorrow.
Mama.